Hey everyone, it's this week's Sports Illustrated / Tennis Channel Tennis Podcast. For the second week in a row, we have an in-person guest this week. It's Todd Martin, former top five player, CEO of the International Tennis Hall of Fame right now. We are recording this at a lovely location that Todd can talk about. We're both in Hawaii for an event this week that's been spectacular, but we don't talk much about Hawaii. Todd and I talk about the Hall of Fame. I know it's always a topic of interest with you guys, who doesn't get in, who does get in, who should get in, who shouldn't get in. We talk a little bit about the procedures with Todd and what he's trying to do in his, I guess it's not so new anymore, but his role as CEO of the Tennis Hall of Fame. So good Hall of Fame discussion coming up with one of the sport's good guys. This is Todd Martin.
Why don't we, you want to do the plug? You want to do the plug portion of today's show and
sure.
Tell the good folks where we're doing this?
Welcome to the Four Seasons Hualalai in Kona, Hawaii. We are here doing a Tennis Insiders Camp. Michael Chang, Jose Higueras, Mark Kovacs of Sports Science fame, Carrie Glassman of Nutrition fame, John Wertheim of podcast fame.
There you go.
And Todd Martin. And it's been fun, right? Yeah, it's been a special week. Yeah. And nice to be here with friends and family, but also, you know, for me, being somebody who doesn't get to be on the court very much anymore, it's been a lot of fun to sort of try to sharpen my teaching mettle. And, it's nice to be around people who are engaged and interested in getting better at tennis.
I'm going to call this the first annual in hopes that we'll do this again next year and people will hear this and
hopefully we'll be invited back.
If you came here and to my mind, Jose Higueras is as good, you know, that's as fine a tennis coach as there is, bar none. And you and Michael and sports science and, you know, we have a nutritionist here. Pretty good gig. If you signed up for it, I don't think you're coming away disappointed. Put it that way.
No, I think it's a great experience. I think, it's always funny. You buy a ticket for something because of a draw, but oftentimes what gets you to come back is not necessarily that bigger
so
draw.
True. Yeah, exactly.
And I'm incredibly biased. Jose was my coach or teacher for 14 years of my professional career. He's not why people decided to come to the Tennis Insiders camp, but he will be the reason why so many people be interested in coming back.
So I was looking up, this is a transition part of today's show. I was looking up Jose, and I know him as, you know, that's Jose Higueras, the guy who's sitting in the box when players win majors, and he was your coach, and he was Michael's coach, and he was Jim's coach. I think he worked with Pete. Did he work with?
Yeah,
he worked with all five of you besides Andre. Huh? That's amazing. And I know he's close to Andre.
Yeah, and that's then amazing. He also participated significantly in Federer's career,
right,
and not insignificantly in Nadal's career, just not not necessarily known.
It's a remarkable coaching career, but then you go back and look it up, and he predated, I mean, we're about the same, I think he predated us both. I don't remember him as a player. He was a hell of a player.
He was a great player. In fact, that was one of the great things about me being assigned by the USTA to his responsibility when I first turned professional. For me, going out to Palm Springs to work with Jose, it was an honor. You know, I knew him as a player. I didn't know him as a coach yet. I think at the time he was probably 35, 36 years old. And but I had remembered him in the few chances to watch European clay court tournaments on U.S. cable. I remember seeing Jose in one tournament in particular where I tuned in and they were warming up and they did, you know, the typical biographical stuff, and as the commentators were talking about Jose, they were talking about him like a human being, not like a tennis player. And talking about his character and the things he was doing to give back to people. And growing up in middle America, that was core to what my education was. And so I really, I was drawn close to him before I ever knew him.
You said there, you and I grew up near each other. So there's something very Midwest about Spain in general, I think. But
well, you know, Jose comes from as working class of a family as there is, and he was a ball boy at the tennis club for the members, not a ball boy for the tournament, but a ball boy for the members on a daily basis. That was his job. And he wasn't doing that just for community service hours. He was doing that to bring some money home to help feed the family. And I think there's a real purity when we get into cultures that are honorable and, you know, doing everything they can to put food on the table for their families, and they're grounded in some pretty fundamental principles. You get some amazing people out of those cultures.
But I was going to say that he's done such a fine job coaching. You forget about his former career, and I think, you know, you were top five player, reached major finals. You are now the CEO of the International Tennis Hall of Fame, and I think for a lot of people, that's your new identity. So A, how are you rolling with that? And then B, I think I can't tell you how much mail I get or how much this comes up in conversation. Who does and doesn't, should and shouldn't get into the Hall of Fame is a topic of bottomless interest for tennis fans. So first, I mean, how's this transition going where you're no longer, you know, Todd Martin, the top five player, you're Todd Martin, head of an organization?
Yeah, it's, first of all, I'm comfortable with it and I enjoy that, but it is very distinct. I am, you know, both by my former peers on the tour and by those in the administration of the sport, I'm deemed to be a suit. I'm no longer former player. Occasionally it's a caveat, which frankly I would I prefer it this way. You know, I always feel it's best to be known for what you're doing, not for what you've done, and I'm trying my best to do a good job at something that a few years ago was quite foreign to me, but has grown to be something I'm very comfortable with and enjoy quite a bit. The discussion about who gets in and who doesn't is fortunately one I get to dodge really well because and really easily because. The only thing I'm involved in when it comes to this, to who gets in and who gets out, is the administration of it all. And so I don't have to opine on whether Joe's record stands up to Mary's or vice versa. I only have to make sure that the policies and procedures are being followed and everybody is fulfilling their responsibility within the construct of our induction process. If you
sounds
will.
So suit like no, but I mean, do you have? Are you indifferent? Are you neutral? Do you have?
No,
views
I have.
On...
I have strong opinions. And in the committee meeting that creates the ballot, I have voiced some of those opinions. And not from a this guy should be in and this person shouldn't, but from a you have to look at things on a continuum, if you will, and in a perfect world, Hall of Fame induction is absolute. It's this person's body of work exceeds a defined threshold. And then this person's doesn't. Inevitably, though, there is a comparative element to it. And which is fine. That's the human element of all of this. But if the comparative element doesn't make sense from a logic standpoint, then there's something to answer to, and that's fine. I mean, we can answer to it, and the answer just categorically is the committee made their decision and the voters have voted. You know that, and that's it.
But bottom line, would you like to see, you're okay with the standards? Would you like to see them get strict? I mean, again, there's no threshold.
Yeah,
we just
went through a thorough review and amendment of our policies and procedures, which I don't want to say got into the standard business, the standard of induction business. However, we towed the waters a little bit, and I think on the player side. We're going to continue to have some of the same deliberations as there's always been. Why is she in and she isn't? Or why is he in and why is he isn't? On the contributor side, I do believe that we strengthened the standards. And that's because I think if I could summarize it is... The players who have been inducted into the Hall of Fame have either won the greatest tournaments in the world and or have been number one for some duration of time. And so a contributor, in some ways, should be judged on that metric.
Have they ever
been the very, very best at their craft? And that's a difficult question to answer because it is right. So subjective in the contributor realm. But we have to understand that exceptional contributions to the sport, loads of people have made exceptional contributions to the sport. But we have to, I think that bar really needed to be raised, and that's why we've changed it to be more a visionary leader, pioneer, and somebody who's made a transcendent impact.
And
on the sport.
The voting's not every year, right?
Now, the contributor category will be considered every 4 years now.
Gotcha. And that would include, I'm sure you've seen it. There's a petition going around for Richard Williams. There are a number of other potential candidates that maybe aren't necessarily obvious in the way they may have been in the past. So that's every 4 years there's now...
It is every 4 years, and I think by doing it every 4 years, it raises the bar naturally.
Right.
I also look at it and say, under exceptional circumstance, or exceptional contributions, I look at it and I say, well then, that's going to predispose us to... administrators, promoters, and the such. Somebody who's been visionary and a pioneer and has made a transcendent impact on the sport opens up, I think, a broader group of possible contributors. And if you look at somebody like Richard Williams, I would look at him almost first in that discussion. Considering, the boldest vision you could possibly imagine, he led his daughters to the promised land,
right.
If you will. And if not for him, the transcendence that has been Venus and Serena would have never occurred. So I think there's an amazing case for Richard down the line.
Are you prepared, if these standards get... more stringent and more strenuous, are you prepared for having some summers come by and there's no one to induct?
Well, that's the premise by which we entered the discussions. The business of the Hall of Fame has to be able to stand on its own. The show can't be the business.
No. The induction
right.
weekend, yeah.
Right. The business can benefit from a great show, And when we have really strong induction classes with people like Andre Agassi or others, certainly the business of the Hall of Fame improves, but we're a lot more than a one-event business. We have the responsibility to preserve and promote the history of the sport. We've got a 12,000 square foot museum.
The venue itself is remarkable.
We had to be prepared to not have an induction class at any moment in order to have the authenticity or integrity of the policies and procedures hold up. Because, you know, if in a given year your ballot, you know, the best player out there never won a slam and highest ranking was 3 in the world, you can't induct that person just because you need somebody to induct.
You got to cater to pay.
You have to be willing to suffer from a business side in order to make sure that the authenticity prevails. So I not only am okay with it, but I expect it will happen.
I was going to say, you just sort of map this out.
If not immediately, soon.
You never know who's going to retire when, obviously.
Yeah.
But I think on the men's side especially, and women's too, a very small subset of players has done a vast majority of the winning, that you just kind of do the math and...
Absolutely. It's absolutely the case. And if the voters don't deem the others who haven't had Federer and Nadal's and the Williams sisters' careers, if they don't deem the others to be worthy of induction, then they won't be inducted. And in which case, you know, we do different work in order to promote the history of the sport and celebrate our champions. We bring the history makers back and celebrate them. And it won't be as enjoyable from a business side of things, but at the same time, first and foremost, we are the Hall of Fame, which is the benchmark for greatness in our sport.
And is there any talk about having standards? I mean, so some a name that's come up just in chatter is Lena, and people say, well, I don't think she never got to number one, and she won two majors, which is great. But then people say, but look what she did. She opened the gates to China. Think about how many, hundreds of millions of people she exposed to tennis. And someone else says, that shouldn't matter. If I'm from a small country, I shouldn't be punished. And it's very healthy, and it's very reasonable on both sides. But there is a debate that exists because these standards don't necessarily exist ironclad. I mean, doesn't golf say... Here are the boxes you have to check, and if you check them, you're good, and if you don't, you're not.
Yeah, at one point in time, they did. They
don't do that anymore.
Okay. No.
But you
it might have been
the
LPGA that had
that's
where
right.
It was two majors and a certain number number of tournaments. Listen, I think it's the Hall of Fame. It's not the Hall of the greatest tennis players ever to live. It's the Hall of Fame.
Right.
And I think it's really hard. It's hard when you enter into a world of subjectivity. Frankly, it's just really hard to identify where on-court performance exclusively and wins and losses exclusively should determine what somebody's place in the game is.
I think it's healthy, right?
Yeah,
it's fun to have a
Michael Chang, who's here with us, only won one major and never was ranked number one in the world. But one of the reasons Lena probably ended up being as good as she was because Michael opened up the sport to people of Asian descent and said it's possible, and I don't have any problem with that. The thing I would have problems with is when somebody's playing career is at a certain level, and for one reason or another isn't being given the nod.
Right. The were you there when Michael told that story about the 96 US Open? Were you there for that?
Yes. Yeah.
So well, I'll tell it real quick. So Michael's within a few, you know, he's very close to taking over for Pete Sampras, number one ranking in the world, and he's watching the courageous Sampras match, the famous US Open match, and Sampras is down match point, and Michael's thinking, all Krejcia wins this point, I become number one in the world. And Krejcia misses a forehand. And so not only did, I mean, had Chang won the final and beaten Pete, he would have been number one, but even before that, a few days earlier, one gimme forehand, and Michael Chang is number one. So even if we have these ironclad standards, you have to win X, you have to have this ranking. I thought that was a pretty wild demonstration of really is a game of inches, just how delicate those can be.
Well, it is, and would Michael Chang's greatness be measured any differently? Or sorry,
yeah, no,
he might
right.
be measured differently, right. but would his greatness really be any different?
Exactly,
literally.
If Alex Krejcia makes a passing shot,
would have hit a passing shot on that point?
Right.
You know, I don't know where the voters will ever deem this next person I'm going to talk about, but David Ferrer was number four in the world for years on end, behind Federer, Nadal, and Djokovic. Is the fourth next to those guys in a sustained level of excellence like David achieved?
Right.
You know what? I'm not going to say that one way or another, but I would at least say
there's a conversation to be had.
That there aren't too many people who have sustained a level of excellence, be it at number four, at number one, at number eight, at number 15, but to be that consistently at the top and perform at his peak, right, is, I think it's a demonstration of unbelievable greatness. I just don't think he was born with all the physical gifts that
born at the right time.
Yeah, but I think you got to measure guys the way they are.
Right.
Against who they are, or against
but you could go further with that and say the same way Michael Chang inspired Li Na. How many sort of undersized players has David Ferrer inspired by? Yeah. Hey, work hard, don't do stupid things, and compete and
figure out. Yeah, go back to work for your dad and his construction business, and figure out that playing tennis is a pretty good gig.
Construction sucks. I think I can go back to hitting forehands. Here's an unpleasant question. That other, this may have predated you, but other sports Hall of Fames, and I think even there's a Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. I think all Hall of Fames that you are not inaugurating people that are deceased. They are vital, vibrant organisms. Sometimes unpleasant facts emerge post induction. Is there a policy? I mean, if in baseball, if you found out that inductee X had a banned substance issue, there might be a call to remove that player. I know tennis had one sort of extraordinary case, but is there a policy?
We do have a policy, and unfortunately that policy was created because a Hall of Famer, a former Hall of Famer, was accused and eventually found guilty of sexual predator, rape, right. sexual assault.
And so subsequent to his induction.
And so, the first step was to suspend him indefinitely, and then eventually that person was expelled. That policy does not apply to those who are deceased, because there is no opportunity for that individual to have an ability to defend himself or herself, and I think it's an appropriate policy. It's a real sad thing that we had to deal with pretty early in my tenure, we had to remove somebody from the Hall of Fame, which is, you know, something that you, certainly when you're inducting somebody, you would never envision having to remove them.
Did the fact that the crime was tennis related? I mean, this was a former player who he was coaching. So if this had been insider trading, or if he'd robbed a bank, it would have been the same analysis.
The actual terminology is crime of felony or moral turpitude, and
so anything.
So I think you know it's a broad enough description that it could apply, but it would also protect from the standpoint of, you know, if somebody in a authoritarian society was arrested because they disagreed with the political views of their leader and was thrown into jail and convicted of treason or whatever it might be.
You'd have the discretion.
Have the discretion.
All right, I got two more for you. Kim Clijsters gets inducted this year. I was talking to her a few weeks before, and she said, you know, it's in Europe, we don't really have these things. And it seemed like cool. I was happy to do it, but it didn't really. And then I talked to, you know, she's obviously married to an American and his family. Well, this is a huge deal. Hall of Fame. That's amazing. And then she got it, the spirit, and was thrilled to be in Newport. But how do you sort of stress to all the players who didn't grow up in a culture of Hollywood Walk of Stars or Cooperstown or Cleveland Rock and Roll Hall of Fame? How do you sort of impress upon the international players how special this is?
Well, it's a constant dialogue with those who are former players, those who are current players, Hall of Famers, the other organizations that that lead our sport, and it's too self-serving to be the Hall of Fame representative and go around and say Hall of Fame induction means this, this, and this. It's when people like Andy Roddick are inducted and they share how much it means to them with the world, especially in this day and age of social media, and the relationship that is able to be maintained between Andy and the guys who are still on tour. You know, the fact that it meant so much to him for sure has resonated with the likes of Federer and Nadal and Djokovic. It's difficult. It's probably one of the more difficult things that we have to tackle is this American concept of Hall of Fame and getting the international community, in some ways the fan, but in some ways the athlete, energized about what this really means.
But this was my last question. Fans love this stuff. I mean, someone, I don't know how this guy, some Stan Wawrinka's, we all agree he should be in. But the fact that this was even a discussion must have 50 emails and all over social media. I mean, this has become a great parlor game, and I think it's great. It's healthy, it's fun, great parlor game for tennis fans. What is their role in this, and how do you sort of take all of this interest and all these opinions? I mean, name a player, Juan Carlos Ferrero, and everybody, you throw it out there and you'll get 50 responses, both sides. How do you sort of alchemize that into interest, visitors, you know, whatever else you're trying to do?
Boy, well, I think first and foremost, the history of our sport has been created by everybody. It hasn't just been created by the Hall of Famers. So if anybody is ever on the cusp of being inducted and doesn't, I think it's still incumbent on us at the Hall of Fame to have their story available, to be able to share that story. The other elements of it are, you know, I look at it and I just say, if you can make your best case argument for everybody, I think instead of looking at the negatives, instead of saying, yeah, but,
Right.
And yeah, but, you know, like with Stan, Stan Wawrinka has never been number
didn't
two in the world.
I was going to say, didn't.
Right. You can't say he won three majors, yeah, but he never got ranked in the top in the top two in the world. You say that's the best he has to offer. You wouldn't judge a steakhouse on how good their tofu offerings are, nor would you judge the vegan restaurant on the fact that they don't serve steak. You just have to say, how good is this? Well, you know what? Stan Wawrinka is really good. How many people have ever won three majors?
It's a good steakhouse, Stan Wawrinka.
How many people have ever won three majors? Not many. Not many.
Final of a four.
And then also amidst, also amidst a generation that at least people can deem to be a special one.
And, well, we can keep going on Stan. Hey, beat Nadal, Djokovic in his three majors. But I'm saying, like, how do we alchemize all this interest and all this passion that fans have about this discussion into...
You keep the discussion going. I mean...
Do you send them to Newport? Do you, take the show on the road and have a traveling...
So I think there's a couple of things. One, obviously, we'd love to have more visitors in Newport. It's a remote location, and it's not easy to get to, and I think we all accept that. That being said, I don't think people get disappointed when they are when they do visit. But the other thing is, and I think this is probably the most impactful element of our policies and procedures amendments that that we just went through in 2018, we'll introduce fan voting. So if a fan really wants to participate in that conversation, one, they can write to your mailbag, but two, and probably more impactfully, they can get on and they can tick the boxes that they want ticked. And there's an effect and impact that they'll have on the ultimate induction of the Hall of Famers.
Yao Ming is going to be a tennis Hall of Famer. They're not going to be able to stuff the ballot box like they did at the NBA All-Star.
They will see the exact same ballot as our voters will. So if there's 10 people on the ballot, the fans will see all 10 names, and then they can vote for 1, 2, 3, 10, whatever number there are.
I'm blanking on this. Is the ballot out? For next
year? It'll it's been done, but it'll come out in September. We'll announce it in September.
Gotcha. I won't make you
good.
Go through my guesses. All right, this is great. Go. You're due on the court.
I know.
This is great.
I gotta go get burnt a little bit more.
Go get sunburnt.
All right. Thanks, John.
Thanks, buddy.
All right, that does it for this week. Special thanks to Todd spending some time with us here. Thanks to our producer Jamie Lasanti. Thanks to everyone for listening. Interesting talk, this Hall of Fame. And Todd sort of, I don't want to say undersold it, but Todd could have sold it a little more robustly. I'm smiling as he overhears me saying that. It's a great venue. It's a great location. Newport. No one goes to Newport and comes away disappointed. It's a couple hours from Boston, a couple hours from Hartford, a couple hours from New York. It's easy to get to. There's an Amtrak that gets you there. It's a fun weekend, and I'd encourage everyone to visit the Hall of Fame. It's a great, great place to spend a day or a weekend. That'll do it for this week. We'll have another guest next week. I have a suspicion I know who it is, but I'll keep everyone in a bit of suspense. But keep your suggestions coming. They've been great. Comments always appreciated. You can download this on iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever fine podcasts are sold. Thanks again for listening. Thanks to Todd, and we'll do it again in 7 days. Have a good week, everyone.